If you were your highest self, what would that look like? What would you think from moment to moment? What would you say from time to time? What would you do every now and then? What would you think and say and do if you were being your highest self? Sometimes we think we have a general idea of what being our highest self would look like. And so we let it go at that, but I encourage you to be specific. What does it look like to be your highest self in relationship? What does it look like to be your highest self in livelihood? What does it look like to be your highest self with regard to your health and your eating habits? What does it look like to be your highest self in every area of your life? What would that look like? Spell it out for yourself. Define it. Every act is an act of self-definition. In any event, you might as well do it consciously rather than unconsciously. It will serve you. So we're here redefining ourselves, recreating ourselves anew in every single moment of now. And the world will contrive to construct circumstances, situations, and conditions, not only allowing us to do so, but encouraging us to do so. Just when you think everything is going smoothly, the boss will walk in and say, "You're being downsized." Just when you think everything is going swimmingly, your spouse will come in and say, "I'm leaving for another lover." Just when you think everything is going fine, your doctor will say, "Oh, incidentally, we've noticed that you have filled in the blank." Life will contrive to present you with people and circumstances and situations, allowing you to move into the next highest expression of your grandest thought about yourself. And if you don't have that idea about yourself already formulated in your mind, you will be tempted to fall in those moments into reaction rather than creation. Rather than experiencing yourself in those important moments as a recreation of the version of who you are, which you have carefully thought out, you will experience yourself as a reaction, a re-enaction of what you have been for lo these many years. You will act as you have acted before, even though it has clearly not served you to do so in the past. That won't make any difference. You'll do it anyway. And there's something interesting about those words. Reaction and creation are the same word. Only the C and the R have become confused. And I like to say that when you see correctly, you are who you really are. One who creates and not one who reacts. So one of the things I hope that we will do during our time together in this program is to recreate yourself anew in the form and shape of who you really are at the next highest level of your experience. And I hope that is at least part of what you're doing as you experience this program. I hope that you're doing something more than simply listening, taking in. That's good. That's helpful, that's beneficial. But wouldn't it be great if you were doing more than just taking in, but starting to also let out some of the long-held inside ideas about your grandest version of yourself? And it's important to see that these events that occur in our lives, the doctor coming into the office telling us about the new health news of the week, or the spouse coming in and saying, "It's been fun," and, or the boss approaching us in the hallway, "By the way, how long have you been with us, not counting today?" It's important that we see these experiences as gifts, as treasures, as marvelous opportunities for us to choose and decide declare and demonstrate, express and fulfill our grandest idea of who we are. And I want to go one step further than that. They are not only gifts, they are self-created gifts, given to us by us, drawn to us by us, to provide us with the perfect platform on which to display the latest model of the highest idea we hold about ourselves and God. That's the true wonder of the human experience, and that's the reason why there are no victims and there are no villains. And when you leave this life and meet all of the other players in your dramas again, as you will, you will observe that you are meeting nothing more than the other parts of you who have chosen to gather together in this experience you call your current life, in order that the whole of you might have a unified understanding of what it is to be who you are. An experiential understanding rather than simply a conceptual one. You know, it's one thing to conceive of oneself as patient or forgiving or understanding. I am patient is a marvelous declaration. But until it's experienced in physical form, in relationship to that which requires patience, it is meaningless. I am love means very little conceptually. Oh, it's a grand concept, to be sure, but it has no functional meaning. It has no meaning in functional form. It's just a concept. Yet when you are being love, or as we say in our language, being loving, in those moments we understand what it's like to be that rather than simply to conceive of ourselves as that. And that's what's happening here in life. We are divinity personified, and yet we seek the constant re-experiencing of that in form. We seek to put that concept in a specific formation that allows us to know it experientially. And so what I said yesterday, I meant, we are God's information. We are God's information. There's a lot more going on here than we might have imagined in our lives. And the day will come when you will look at all of your persecutors. The boss who fired you, the spouse who left, the doctor who gave you the bad news, and then it turned out that it was a misdiagnosis. So when we see the grand scheme of things, we wind up being grateful. And the day will come when you will be grateful for those who persecute you. And the day will come when you will see the gift that they gave you and the design of the whole weave. You'll stand back far enough from the weave to see the glory of the tapestry. Always remember this in the moments of your greatest turmoil. Were it not for the winds that buffet the canyons, we would never see the beauty of their carvings. And this too, remember, in your most difficult days and times. I will tell you a little story. Always in school, I did very well in communications arts. Spelling, reading, writing, always did well. Arithmetic, not so well, but always did well in communications arts. And always was very proud of it. It was my high point on my report card. It brought up the rest of the grades. And then in my sophomore year of high school, I was doing so well in English literature that the teacher said to me one day, you know, we have nothing to teach you here. You're way ahead of the rest of the class, and if I taught up to your level, I'd lose everybody else, and if I really taught you at their level, which I'm required to do because that's where most of them are, you're going to be bored. So I'm going to suggest that we talk to the counselor here and see if we can't put you in a different kind of a class. I said, fine. So within 2 days, I've been in a class called English C. Now, English C meant college English, and I'm a sophomore. I'm the only sophomore in the room. And they're throwing this stuff at us, you know, and they're teaching us freshman, college, English lit, and all that stuff. And they're giving us a book a week, and they want a report at the end of the week, book report and all that. And I'm like really moving fast here. So at the end of the grading period, I get my report card, and I get a C in English. Now, you got to understand that this is below low for me in English. So I'm devastated, and I go home, and I'm really upset, and I throw the report card on the table, and my mother says, "What's the problem?" And I explain it to her. She says, "Son, sit down." I sit down at the table, and I start telling her, "It's not fair. It's not fair. I'm doing really well, so they contrive to put me in a class where I can't possibly do as well." My mother says, "Listen, I'm going to tell you something now, and I want you to remember it for the rest of your life. And I want to share this with you now, so that you too can remember it for the rest of your life when things aren't going so well." She said to me, "To the best students go the most difficult lessons." Do you understand the wisdom? Now, life, I've been told, is not a school. And we are not here to learn anything, but to remember. But to the extent that remembering itself can bring us a lesson, to that extent, the wisdom is wonderful. If, therefore, you have brought yourself some very difficult lessons, it is because the universe is clear where you are on the scheme of things, where you are on the eternal scale. We gave you in a previous session 7 wisdoms, and I want to very quickly move through those 7 wisdoms and revisit them so we can come to completion on that part of our sharing. The first wisdom we've already revisited: in what way, if at all, would your life change if the following statement were true? Nobody owes me anything. And we spent some time on that. I'd like now to move to the second one. In what way, if at all, would your life change if the following statement were true? I don't owe anybody anything at all. I don't owe anybody anything at all. How would your life change? Or what came up for you when you did that homework?
I personally went through a bankruptcy, and have personal friends that I also owe some money to. And that something I think about from time to time. And if that debt was paid, I would feel a little more comfortable with myself, because it's not me, but it's me at this point in time. Definitely would be a lift off the shoulders to have those debts gone.
Well, I'm here to tell you that the debts are gone. I absolve you of those debts in this very instant moment. Now there's only one reason to give that money to those people, not because you owe it to them, but because you choose to, as a means of saying thank you.
There's a distance between the friendship now that there wasn't there before.
Talk to
and
you.
I don't think it's all mine. It's a two-way distance.
Yes.
You know? And it's a shame. It is a lesson. You know, I made a promise, and it's a hard one to keep right now.
Continue to talk to them and say to them, "I noticed that there's a distance in our friendship, and I would do anything to repair that. And I know that the financial strain that we've all experienced as a result of what's occurred here has played a part in that. It would be foolhardy for us to think that it hasn't. And I wonder if there's any way we could move through and beyond that and still retain the largest part of our friendship."
I feel in time that'll happen, but it's taking time to do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else who had any reaction to that statement? Yes.
If I did not owe anybody anything, I would be free to act in accordance with my highest thought and my highest good for myself, rather than to act in the ways that I think people want me to act.
And what would happen if you acted according to your highest good, for your highest cause and your highest reason? Can you be trusted to not turn into some kind of monster? some kind of self-serving, kick everybody else in the pants monster? See, this is the question that faces humankind. If we had total freedom, can we be trusted? If we were relieved by some moral authority of all sense of duty or obligation, could we then be trusted nevertheless to do the so-called right thing? Would our definition of the right thing be equal or higher than the commonly held definition of the right thing? If some moral authority relieved us of all sense of duty or responsibility, would we nevertheless show up magnificently? Or would we show up as less than we would have shown up if duty and responsibility were calling the action? Do you see the question? What do you think is the answer? I'm just curious. Would humankind wind up being less if there were not laws and obligations and duties to God and country spelled out in the documents? Or would humankind, in fact, rise to a higher place? What do you think?
For myself, I would rise to a higher level, and I think other people would too, because if you truly did not feel that you owed anybody anything, now you're free to choose. You're free to choose the best without fear.
Yeah.